Now, our first speaker is the cleverest man in Fleet Street, the literary editor of The Spectator. He's also my scary old boss at Peterborough, the Telegraph gossip column. He wrote You Talking to Me, Rhetoric from Aristotle to Trump and Beyond, Right to the Point, How to Be Clear, Correct and Persuasive on the Page. And his latest book, which has been much admired in Books of the Year, is The Haunted Wood, A History of Childhood Reading. Ladies and gentlemen, Sam Lee.
Thank you, Harry. Gosh, welcome everybody. It's very nice to be here. Great privilege, and thank you for a very generous introduction. Now, to start by talking about my book, I'd like to offer two kind of origin stories for it. And one of them is perhaps a bit too intimate, but it takes place in my parents' bed in the suburbs of Surrey in about, I guess, 1977. And it's my father with his arm around me reading to me from Kipling. Kipling's Just So Stories. And I think we oldies all know about Kipling, so I don't need to be such an evangelist for him as I am in other companies. But my memory of those readings have stayed with me all my life, and the cadences of Kipling's language. My father was an actor at one point and therefore, you know, really gave it some. But those wonderful kind of Homeric epithets Kipling has, the great grey-green greasy Limpopo set about with fever trees, and in the, how the whale got his throat, you know, you must not forget the suspenders, O best beloved. And to any child being read to by a parent, I think Kipling's epithet is the one that resonates. You feel best beloved in that moment, and those childhood experiences of reading are ones that stay with us all their lives. Now, the second data point is more recent. It's my home in London's dully suburban East Finchley. About 5 years ago, I'm not sure I've got this microphone quite right, and I'm downstairs doing something dull and suburban, like chopping onions for the children's supper, and I hear this noise coming down the stairs from upstairs. It's one of these kind of howl of rage and anguish, and it's the sort of thing that if any of you who had young children will know. When you hear that noise, you are halfway up the stairs doing Scooby-Doo legs before you have any idea that you've stopped chopping onions. And I burst into my daughter's room thinking, Christ, she's broken her arm again, and we're going to have to explain to social services again what she's broken her arm. But no, she was sitting on the end of her bed with a copy of Charlotte's Web in her hands, and she'd just got to that bit. And then her anguish turned into something more like kind of mild offence and annoyance that she was sitting there in such utter emotional pain, and that her father was dancing what looked like a jig around the room, pointing and laughing and saying, this is wonderful, this is wonderful, you've got it. So both of those things fed into the premise for the book that I've written about children's writing, which is that it's something that is passed on from generation to generation, and it's something where the stakes are very, very high. A lot of people think, I think, of children's writing as something that's a sort of defective, feeble sidebar to the grown-up sort, something that needs to be got past before you move on to proper literature. But I think this gets to get it quite upside down. Children's writing is more important and more complex, psychologically and morally, and in some sense more interesting than grown-up literature, because it's the foundation on which everything else is built. And what we read as children absolutely stays with us. As witness, what was a very encouraging experience while I was writing my book. For about 2 years, I'd go to a party and people would say, you know, what are you doing? And I'd say, ooh, you know, writing a book. Now, normally, when this happens, you can see people glaze over in real time when you tell them what your book is about. Someone who's just come back from the loo will need to go to the loo again. Someone whose drink is full will nevertheless need to go and get another drink. And yet people leaned in, as Sheryl Sandberg would put it. They were always really interested. Everyone's engaged by this subject. And then they'd say, oh, is X in it? And I go, oh, fuck. So for the first half of the book, I would note X down on a piece of paper and go back and think, right, that's another week's work. The second half of the book, I'd simply make my peace with the fact that I took on an horribly encyclopedic project to which the book was always going to be fundamentally inadequate. But nevertheless, I did my best. And what I wanted to try and do was recognise that because children's books are written by adults, in some ways, that the history of children's literature tracks the history of childhood itself. Because always you've got what adults imagine children are like, or remember children like, what they imagine children need or want or should be taking in literary terms. You know, the idea that children are impressionable and that what you read to them or what they read forms their behaviour is one that goes all the way through. And that's why, for instance, through the 17th and 18th centuries, children's literature was pretty grim because it was in the hands of what one critic unimprovedly described as Calvinists of unrelenting severity. I kind of love these guys, but not everybody does. Because they started from the premise that all children, at the moment of birth, are essentially radioactive with original sin. And that your job as a writer for children is to get rid of that original sin and bring them to God, because heaven knows if they die in that condition, they're going straight to hell. And the way to do this, obviously, was to scare the willies out of them. So you've got such books as a colossal bestseller in 1674, James Janeway's A Token for Children, which is a snuff anthology of the early deaths of 14 children from tuberculosis, all of whom go gratefully to their makers saying, "My little friends, lose no time running up and down upon the Sabbath or playing at knuckle bones, but get to thy prayers." And they would expire, and there'd be copious weeping of tears, and the morals would be solemnly expatiated that obviously children should stop running up and down on the Sabbath and fall to their prayers. And this is what they had instead of the Gruffalo back then. It was only really when Alice's Adventures in Wonderland came in the middle of the 19th century and put a fantastic two fingers up to the pious tradition that we were really away to the races for children's literature. And what I've tried to do is trace a kind of big history that runs all the way through from the fairy tales of prehistory right up to Harry Potter. And you may ask, why do I not go beyond Harry Potter? Well, partly that's because it's a great inflection point in the genre and revitalised children's publishing. Partly that's because it has the most fantastic audiobooks, I am firmly informed. And partly because I didn't want to have to write about David in Walliams. So I've run through the lot. I've done my best to uncancel Kipling. I've done my best to keep attention on the absolutely fabulous T.H. White. I've done my best to correct such apprehensions as may exist about psychic bunnies from Watership Down. And I've done a lot, and the ones that aren't there, I apologise for. I'm hoping that if everyone buys my book, there'll be a revised and expanded paperback. I'll end just by saying why I called it The Haunted Wood. In part, that was because I'm a W.H. Auden super fan, and this was an opportunity to quote that marvellous stanza from his poem September the 1st, 1939, which seems to me to capture something, you know, as the poem, as you will all know, being very literary, has Auden hanging out in Lower Manhattan on the eve of the First World War, sitting in a bar, feeling sorry for himself. And he thinks, "Lest we should see where we are, lost in a haunted wood, children afraid of the night, who have never been happy or good." And that seems to me to capture that sense of the child in the adult, and the adult in the child, which goes through not only our childhood reading, but our whole lives. And of course, the haunted wood, as Auden recognised there, is the place in fairy tales and folk tales that are the centre of the European tradition, or where and that stand behind almost all children's writing, are where children go to have their adventure. It's a place that's a little bit scary and a little bit exciting, and you come back changed. Thank you very much.